Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Tech Magic, the podcast where we explore all the different news that are happening in the technology, gaming, innovation space, you name it. I am your host, Kathy Hackle, and I am here to break down the latest innovations in tech, fashion, space, everything in between, and to talk about things and whether they're going to be the future or they're just a passing fad. And I am being joined, as usual, by my guest co-host, who is amazing, Lee Keebler. How you doing?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks for having me back.
You bet.
I've gotten such good responses from people from this podcast. Like, yeah. It's crazy. Like, people that I don't hear from often are hitting me up and are like, look, I'm listening to this podcast. I'm really enjoying it. And it's just great.
It is. And I'm getting, like, people saying, like, hey, you guys are really having fun. It's really... You know, they're geeking out to the conversation. I've gotten a few people tell me, I'm going to say this, but like people tell me that it feels like the Pivot podcast, but more about gaming, right? More about like some of the other stuff. So I love that. I'm a huge Pivot fan. So any type of compliment like that, I'm going to be like, oh, yes, I love it. I love it. I love it. So, you know, glad we can geek out over, you know, everything happening in the tech space, but also talk about gaming and talk about crazy, you know, all the crazy stuff that's happening.
It's fun. Someone was like telling me what they thought about the podcast. And I'm like, well, what do you think about the dynamic? And they're like, oh, it's like there's a good cop, bad cop for technology. And I'm like, well, I know who the bad cop is.
Mm-hmm. I think I know who the bad cop is. And it's not me. It is not me, Lee Keebler. Right. So how are the last couple of days for you? What's up?
It was great. We've got some weird weather going on. I always seem to talk about weather, but like that's a Portland thing. Like that's what we do.
That's if you a ask Portland us thing.
Yeah. Yeah. If you ask a Portlander, like, how's it going? Like, well, let me tell you about the weather. we've hit this weird ecological atmospheric river is what they call it.
Wow.
And it's so we've got some street flooding going on right now.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of like that scene from the movie It, where it's just like all the water's running down and you expect to see some kid in a yellow rain jacket running after a red balloon. It's just kind of creepy right now.
Yeah, that's scary. Takes me way back. Hold on, is this It like the first version or the newer version?
It's the same both.
The same version. any version, right? Yeah, I'm like the Tim Curry kind of like It. That's like the original. Yeah, that's what I think when you think It, but my kids think like the newer one, right? So
the newer one's so scary. It's so
yeah,
scary.
I couldn't even. They haven't watched it, but they've seen like the memes and the images and stuff like that. Pennywise and you know. So
I never thought I'd be afraid of a red balloon, but you move to Portland, you see this much rain and like water going into storm drains. I'm like, yeah, no red balloons for me. I'm good.
Please no. That would be so scary. Run the other direction from the red balloon. Oh my gosh. Well, I've had a great couple of days. So obviously I can't talk about it, but
the show's over. Okay.
It's over. Went to Apple. And that was great. I got back from New York a couple of days ago, been kind of working with the kids on a lot of like their end of school year stuff. So that's been great.
I know you can't say anything.
I can't.
I get it. Let me just ask this question. And then you can tell me if you can say anything. Okay?
I can't say anything. No, I cannot say anything, Lee.
Okay, I'm still going to ask the question, and you can just say, I can't say anything. Is the future bright for the Apple Vision Pro?
I can't say anything. Literally, I cannot say anything. Literally, I am like, yes, I cannot say absolutely anything. So I will not say anything. The only thing I'm authorized to say is that I went there. That's all. That's all. So, like, I've seen a couple
just to the Apple Store in general, right? Like the DC Apple Store
for iPads. Yeah. No. So that was interesting. And then the weekend, I spent time with my kids, like thinking through their holiday list, all that stuff. We got into some interesting conversations, and this is going to tie into some of the stuff we're going to talk about. So we talked about the Oxford Dictionary's word of the year is the word Riz.
Okay. And for those who don't know, because I was definitely in this and I'm like, what the heck?
What's what?
Yeah. It's short for charisma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they all use it literally. Like my son's class, they have like these teams, and one of them is like the Rizzler Twizzlers or something.
You know what, though? It makes more sense than my generation's use of the word fat. Okay. Like I can't hate, like Riz has like, okay, it's short for charisma. I can deal with that. Like, I don't know where fat came from. PHAT.
Yeah.
Like that was my, I have to own that generation. I don't know what, but we all said it, you know? So I was like, okay, fine.
Yeah. It's like,
words
fetch,
are fun.
Fetch for Mean Girls. Stop. Yeah. It's not going to happen. Which by the way, Mean Girls is coming back, right?
Oh yeah. Did you see the Walmart ad for it?
I haven't seen the Walmart ad,
but
I am so excited about it. I always internally laugh at myself when I'm with my daughter, especially, and her friends. And I'm like having these really cool conversations because I'm like, my gosh, like if you were looking at me from the outside, you'd probably think like I look like the mom, Regina's mom. I'm like, yeah, that's not what I'm trying to be here. I'm like, I'm cool. I'm not like the other moms.
You're like, sure, you're not.
Sure not. Yeah. but you know, we got into talking about like the word of the year, and my son was like, that's not true, mom. You're lying. You're just pretending to be cool. And I said, no, really, the word of the year is Riz. And we got into talking a lot about some of the stuff that's happening in some of the video games this weekend. So I know we're gonna talk about Fortnite quite a bit, because as you know, we definitely spoke about it last week, and we got some of those predictions right, of potential things that would happen. So I'm very excited that we dedicated some time to it last week, and now we can go full in. But I mean, in my son, like my daughter's middle school chat, they were talking about the Eminem skins for the Eminem concert in Fortnite. You know, I got a text from a friend of mine. She's like, hey, do you have any special codes? My son was in the queue, got kicked out. So it's like at least the younger Gen Alpha that I'm exposed to, they were all like excited about it, or, you know, and my kids know Eminem through me. So I
think, and that's the thing, right? Like it is our generation's music that somehow has crossed a barrier and is not like, there's not a generational gap here. And I think that's one of the biggest strengths that this technology holds. And that's all I'm going to say on this segment, because it's like an entire conversation for like segment two or three I saw in the show notes. So like,
we're going to go down. But yeah, then I asked them if they want to go to the movies and see the Beyonce concert, which crushed it at the box office.
Yes.
And they said no, because this is really interesting. The posters for the Beyonce concert in the movie theater were very scary to them.
They give specific on that?
No, they just look like it's like this silhouette of a woman, and then there's like extra arms or something. But she's like, it just gave them a weird vibe. So they were scared by the poster, and you know, they're still very young. And they're like, mom, I think we're going to skip that. So I thought that was interesting that to them it was like.
Now, did they go to the Taylor Swift concert movie?
Oh my gosh. Of course they went. Not my son. He was like, but the girls definitely went. Big fans. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad to see both of them succeed though. Both of those have done so well. Like I think
it's
I love
that they're both like helping each other. Like, you know, Taylor Swift showed up at Beyonce's like premiere. So.
Yeah. Which in and of itself is great because of like, well, they used to be. It was drama.
Yeah. But anyway, you go, ladies. Crush it at the box office. I love this. Okay. So let's get into it. I think we're going to dedicate a lot of time to Fortnite. So maybe let's start with some of the things that are happening with musical artists in avatars.
Yeah, it makes sense.
We can start there. I think that'd be really interesting. Obviously, a couple of weeks ago, you and I were having this discussion about the Beatles and the song that they brought, you know, that did great in the charts.
Now and Then.
Now and Then, right? Which a lot of people really enjoyed. Like I said, I got chills when I first heard it. But there's a lot of stuff happening for people that have not been to London or known ABBA, the, you know, the famous Swedish band. I believe they're Swedish.
Dancing Queen.
Yeah. And they actually have a show in London called Avatar Voyages. I believe that's ABBA Avatar Voyages, something like that in London. And it's a whole show with them performing, but there's like they're in avatar form. There's these like, let's call them holograms, whatever. There's no light field.
Oh, you know, holograms. I hate that word.
I know they're not real holograms, but let's call them holograms. but it's more Pepper's Ghost, to be honest. But anyway, let's not go down that route. But yeah, it's like a whole interesting show. I haven't been able to see it yet. I need to make it to London next time I'm in town to go see it. But there's been, you know, I thought we were going to see a lot more of these concerts pop up. But now what you're starting to see is that starting to happen. So what happened with Kiss is that in their last performance, at the end of the performance, they unveiled this version of themselves in avatar form that are going to live on, right? Creating music, et cetera. So you must have a lot that you want to talk about regarding this. Like, what are your thoughts?
You know, I think this doesn't surprise me at all. Mm-hmm. And it does not surprise me that it's Kiss. Right? Like Kiss is a band that has always kind of been on the forefront of marketing themselves, not necessarily the music. And that's not a dig.
Each personality from a personality perspective.
Yeah. And they are already walking avatars. Like they just
that's
are.
That's a good point.
They have been avatar. Like you're talking about a rock and roll band from the 70s that like made Scooby-Doo cameos, you know, like they've always been out there trying to figure out like, how do they take these action figure human beings of themselves and propel them into something new? So seeing them, and let's be real, they're all getting up there in age. Like I've been on tour. I've been on those road buses and it wears on you real quick. Anyone who can do it for decades like that, I know everyone thinks that it's easy and you're living in nice hotels or whatever. It's still hard. And that just surprises me that they've gone this long without, you know, retiring. So having a way for them to offload a lot of this and still continue on, it makes a lot of sense. I don't think it's the last we'll see of it by any stretch. Mm-hmm. And I also take issue with people saying that they're the first, you know, US based band to do it, but I don't actually know if I agree with that statement. Maybe because I mean, I'm thinking of like Gorillaz have always kind of played along this line before avatars were even a thing. You know, there's plenty of you could bend it as all the way far back as like the Monkees, right? Like the Monkees were
the Monkees. Didn't we have that conversation about the Monkees being the original boy band? You know, not the original boy band, but in the way that we know it now, right?
Yeah.
Joey kind of perspective.
So I don't know, like, but it is cool and it makes sense and. I think we're going to continue to see bands not only retire in this fashion because it's longevity and in a way it's musical.
It's longevity and it's financial, you know, their estate is going to continue to receive funds. You know, they've got to do it, you know, while they still have an audience, right? That wants to continue to listen to them, that can share that with younger audiences.
I
personally think it took too long from ABBA from the Voyages show to now seeing Kiss doing it. I mean, those things take a lot of time to do, but, you know, I thought we were going to see a wave after the Avatar announcement stuff, and some did, but like actual shows, I feel like it took a long time there. Personally.
Well, you know, what really prepared, this gets dark all of a sudden. Thanks for this. let me bring the wet blanket here. But I mean, a big part of it was those, you know, year or so in COVID lockdown was a big proponent of virtualizing concert tours because artists still needed to get out there. And it did very well during that. And then all of a sudden, once concerts were able to come back, the ability to get out of the house and go do that became the novelty in and of itself that we had once forgotten because we didn't realize it could ever be taken away from us. So I think that there was a psychological twist where we thought, oh, this is going to then perpetuate itself very rapidly. But then there was this like moment of just freedom celebration of the fact that you could go to a concert again. And that became part of that experience. And as we're seeing things like Beyonce and Taylor Swift be able to like repackage their live concerts into something like this, it would not surprise me. I'm not saying this is happening. I have no insider information on this. Do not read into this, listeners. But it wouldn't surprise me if, like, down the road, those shows don't also get repackaged into virtual performances down the road. One of the best virtual performances I ever saw, and this happened many years ago, and it's an artist that I talked about on the last show, was Imogen Heap. She did a show through Wave XR, and it was... it was so real and emotional and unique to what I'd seen. And it's a real shame that due to like licensing agreements and changes in hardware and stuff like that, sometimes those things don't last forever. So it's not like I can tell the listeners to go check this out. You can't.
There's so much content from immersive experiences that is like in a graveyard. Like, maybe one day we'll get to see it. To that point, so I'm going to go see Madonna in a couple weeks.
Just to say hi.
Just in a concert. I am so thrilled. I am so thrilled to go see her. I cannot wait. And that's one of those artists that I think could live on for a long time, right? So I would like to see her do something like that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if... I don't know. I feel like a lot of these artists, there's been like this lull gap of like, now they want to come back. They want to do a comeback tour, and it's a refresh of relevance, you know?
Indeed. Or they have farewell tours every other couple of years. I'm like, are we still saying goodbye?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have a feeling like U2 is going to be definitely on that trip of like, they say goodbye until they're actually gone. Like, there's certain bands just know.
Oh, it's their last concert. Wait, what? No, we're kidding. So anyway, I'm really excited to see Madonna. I think she's one of those, iconic artists that I would love to see, because she's like, she has so many personalities, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to say this. This is like weird, but for some reason, when I was reading the Kiss story, and thinking of them as how they've marketed their brands and how they are like, you know, Gene Simmons is someone, but then he's like a persona on stage that is different than who he is, right? I don't know if you remember, this was like in the 90s, and the people that are listening to this are probably going to be like, oh my gosh. Do you remember when Garth Brooks?
Oh, Chris. Yeah. Oh Chris my gosh,
he launched this alter ego.
Yes.
And it flopped. It went really badly. But I'm like, well, with these technologies, I mean, they're going to create multiple versions of themselves that could be, you know, whoever, Madonna X, or maybe he was ahead of his time. Maybe this will work in some virtual form. I don't know. But tell folks what he did, because it's
I lived through it, and I'm from Nashville. So like we kind of all had a front row seat of like, what the heck is
what
going
is
on
he
here?
Doing?
Yeah. And this is all being pieced together because I wasn't expecting to talk about this. So it's like things from the 90s in the back of my head put together with scotch tape. So this is probably completely inaccurate. But if I remember right, like there was actually like a video or a movie, something was happening in the background about this person, this fictional person called Chris Gaines. And so the idea was he was acting or playing a role, and it was like method acting for something that then never came out.
Yeah.
And the fact that it didn't come out is what made it not make sense. And then everyone was like, did he go crazy? He didn't go crazy. Like there was a campaign for something that then like didn't happen. That's what's in the back.
Wasn't there a song? See, that's what I don't remember. I do not remember. I remember it was
there was a whole album. There was an album.
It was an album. Like, but yeah, it was like, Garth, you were doing great in country. Like, what are you doing? So I don't know. Now I was thinking about that. I was like, well, this is interesting because with virtual, like with these virtual concerts and the virtualization of the artist, like they can become whoever they want to be. They can be Madonna X, or they can be whoever, right? Totally. They can be different versions of themselves throughout the different times.
I mean, we're going to talk about the Eminem thing, but Eminem is a really good example because he's an artist that has always had a split personality written into his, like,
Slim
for lack
Shady.
Of a better word, lore, right? Like the Eminem, Slim Shady, Marshall Mathers lore. There's definitely like a storyline there.
Well, so Kiss has a lot of lore. We're not going to get into it. Goodness gracious.
Totally. Yeah. And I think the most bands that get, I was actually surprised to see ABBA do this first because it it's like, okay, it kind of makes sense, but there was never any like story for them. Like, I don't know. They were just kind of a band that, I'm sorry, ABBA fans, like I felt kind of got forgotten. So to see them come out on the forefront with like new technology and a new approach to the music industry and beat people that I thought would do it first to the finish line, total shocker for me.
Yeah.
I'm glad they did it. I'm glad people are starting to talk about it now, but you know.
I think we should take this show on the road, do it live in certain places and go to London. And then we'll do a live show, not at the ABBA concert, because that's not going to happen, but we'll do a live show in London, hypothetically. I'm just, you know, spitballing here. It could happen, right? Let's put it out there in the world.
2024 has got a lot of openings. We can do something. We can.
Anything could happen. You know, come for the next day for the magic. Who knows? So yeah, I think it took a little longer than I thought, but you make a good sense that, you know, we all went back to live experiences and wanted to be with other people. And then what I thought we were going to see by this point is, yeah, I love seeing the virtual avatars and the creation of these things. I thought by this point we would be seeing a lot more volumetric video live into virtual spaces. And I don't know if you remember. Well, yeah, remember we did that whole thing in LA where for Metaverse Fashion Week, I volumetrically streamed in live into Decentraland for the opening. I was the chairperson of the first Metaverse Fashion Week. And, you know, that was like, to me, like, we pushed the technology so hard to be able to do that. It was only 2 minutes. But in volumetric, by the way, people, it's like, let's use the word hologram.
Yeah,
it's not a hologram, but whatever.
Holographic
you know,
video.
You could see me as myself in 3D in Decentraland, right? So, like, I really love that idea. I love the idea of the concerts with avatars, but also eventually, wouldn't it be cool if you see the avatar, but then they turn into themselves and then they go back? I don't know. But I think it's, I hope there's more volumetric in the future. What do you think?
I think there is. The volumetric content's just very heavy. And there's a lot that even Amazon, we were talking about this on the last episode, Amazon had a whole section of like, how do you stream volumetric through AWS? And and it's a good question. There's not been a standardization for it. And I honestly thought we would see more of it because of the power that the new iPhones for like the last three generations have been able to do volumetric capture pretty well, even if it's a static image. But I think a lot of it is the integration into game engines. People forget game engines are actually pretty archaic in many ways. They're a little, everything has to be tweaked into those pieces of technology, and they were never built to handle those formats. So it gets a little crazy. I was creating volumetric hologram business cards that had like little AR or QR codes on it that would, like, little AR me would pop up. And this was back in like 2016, 2017. And you could create that content with basically an off the shelf Xbox Kinect camera. And so, it's one of those things where I think most people don't know we've been able to do this for a long time. And if there's not active people saying this would be really cool, then people are kind of chasing the other shiny objects. But I don't think it's over. I think it'll eventually happen.
No, I do too. And, you know, just like you and I have connected over volumetric because we both love it. And I think you and I are some of the very few people in the world that can actually produce volumetric, which I love that we have that commonality. For me, actually, in 2018, I was like, what if I create the world's first holographic press release? I was working in PR. Yeah, I did that. So, but I was like, I wonder if anyone's done this. So I went to Google, of course. Now it's ChatGPT, of course. But, I went to Google and I wrote, you know, holographic press release. And what I found was a story from 2016 that was kind of like an Onion story. It was like a fake April Fool's Day joke about a company launching a holographic press release with Princess Leia. It was an April Fool's Day joke. Fast forward 2 years from 2016 to 2018, I brought it to life, creating the world's first holographic press release, which you could actually see in Snapchat. It was really early. Like, this is something people weren't doing. So, like, when people ask me if I've ever created or invented things, I'm like, yes, I have. Like, I worked with a really amazing team, came up with this idea, did this. And there's actually still articles out there in VR Scout and other folks that covered it. So very, very near and dear to my heart.
I don't want to call if volumetric is future or fad because I want it to be the future, right? Like, I'm just still kind of waiting for that to for people to even catch on and grasp the concept.
Well, let's say future fad for me, it's got to be part of the future. Like the files have to get, you know, they can't be as heavy as they currently are, but I'm sure we'll get there, right? I have a feeling there's some really interesting ways
to work around that. I worked in, and this is all public knowledge. I'm allowed to say all of this, but I worked at Intel. I worked with the department that did all of the sports volumetric. Their approach of using like voxels, for people who don't know what that means, it means instead of like it being an image, it's a point of light, kind of like a screen has a pixel. So it's a pixel, but it's in an X, Y, and Z space. So it's in three-dimensional space. And if you put enough of them densely together, you see an image just like pixels on a screen. And I believe that is the way to make this type of content broadcastable, as opposed to like these large, heavy formats. Yeah. But it's a lot of math, and it takes a lot of computing, and it takes a lot of work. And we're just... on the cusp of it.
I have a feeling that through AI and like better computation, we're going to achieve it. It's just going to take a while. So I'm going to agree with you. I think it's future. I just don't know when. I thought it was already going to be here, but oh well. Yeah.
Totally.
So,
agree.
Okay. So now I want to go on to our next story about what do kids want for the holidays?
I don't have kids, so I don't know.
You have kids in your life though. Come on. You're around kids. You're a kid yourself, Lee. But anyway.
So here's what's on my Amazon wish list.
Well, for most of these kids, they're actually saying that they don't want physical gaming items, that they want V-Bucks or Robux, which are the digital currencies inside of some of these games. Yeah. They want digital currency and subscriptions more than new games. It says here, boys, like the split is 86% in this study that came out. 86% of boys and 59% of girls are asking for video game stuff. 39% want game subscriptions, 29% want in-game currency, 22% want physical video games. So very interesting. I mean, I see this with my kids. This is
so
very,
Santa
very
can basically trade his sack for like a fanny pack and be good, right?
Oh,
like
yeah.
He doesn't need the big sack full of toys anymore. It's just like, all right, here's your gift cards, kids.
Here's your Roblox gift card. That's really the hot item. Any birthday party I go to with my kids, it's like Roblox gift card, Roblox gift card, Roblox gift card, V-Bucks. So yeah, like definitely.
I know the games. I'm asking you as a parent friend. Do you think that is because they're just obsessed with the game, which I can accept? Mm-hmm. Or is there a part of it of like having the freedom and autonomy of having their own currency to do whatever they want?
Yeah.
Because it was always nice to get like a gift card when I was a kid because I could go to Toys R Us with Toys R Us, Jeffrey Bucks. I don't know. I'm really dating myself here.
Jeffrey Bucks. Oh,
you know
God.
What I'm talking about, right?
Wow.
Yeah. Had the giraffe in the center of the dollar bill. Yeah, yeah. I got stacks of those when I was a kid, and you felt like you had money.
You were like, yes.
Go buy your Legos or like video games or whatever. But is it the psychology of that makes it appealing, or is it just the sheer popularity?
No. I think it's the autonomy, the fact that they can buy whatever they want. Yeah. They can trade. They can do, decorate their houses and adopt me whichever way they want, buy whatever skins that they want. Like, I think it's more about that. I don't think it's like, I guess they do look at the number that they have, like, how many Robux do I have? But like most of my kids are like not saving their Robux. They're like spending them in game. And I'll give you an example. I shared this in the news last year. I said, when my kids were asking, like, what is Auntie so-and-so sending us, right? I said, well, they're sending you, let's say, hypothetically, $40. And they could immediately, like I said to you before, they could make that conversion.
Right.
They could immediately make the conversion from U.S. dollars to Robux. it's something that's going to continue to happen. They're very excited. Like, I even asked my son, I was like, hey, do you want a PS5? And he was like, no, Mom. I was like, really?
I want a PS5. You got an extra PS5 laying around? You just handing out PS5s over here?
Send the PS5 your way. But he was like, no, Mom. I just want blah, 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 right? I was like, oh, wow. That's interesting. He was like, no, I don't need the console. I'm good, Mom. I'm like, wow. Okay. So I don't know. So this is interesting.
I hear is that the public school system just needs to convert their math classes over to Robux and then they'll do fine. Like that's actually what I'm hearing.
Yes. That could be so funny. Johnny has 20 V-Bucks and he wants to change that into 30 Robux. I mean, that would be so funny. They would all know what to do, which is the most hilarious part.
You just got to make it practical. Education is just practical application. That's it. That's it.
So that's really interesting. I think we're going to continue to see this. I think this is not a fad. I think we're going to continue to see kids wanting, digital currency or subscriptions inside the games that they love. Future or fad?
Oh, it's 100% future. I mean, we've watched the trend uptick, and I've not seen a distinct correlation for like adults. Like, there's not really something that kind of fits into that gap, really. I mean, some video games, you can consider Steam to be kind of like that. Yeah. If you use Steam, like, your video games are never tangible in that sense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every console has downloadable games, but that's about as close to a one for one that I can think of. That is like digital assets that adults are collecting. I've not seen that connection yet, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, maybe NFTs at one point, but that's a bad word now, apparently, so we're not talking about that.
I've never said it was a good word. You know this.
I know. Bad cop, good cop here? Ooh, yeah.
Sometimes you win arguments.
You did win that one, I have to say. Touche. Yes, I was wrong about some of those things. So, but yeah, okay. So now I want to go to, like, I think where we're going to spend more time, which is games. Gaming. I don't think this is like a gaming podcast, but I feel like we talk about
it's
so much.
It's the industry, though. It is what propels
the
spatial, the interactive, the immersive tech is because of this industry. So it would be disingenuous not to, right? Like, we build so much of the functional tech out of the game engine itself. Mm-hmm. So how do you ignore that? You can't.
Yeah. I want to, before we get into it, like, I want to talk about some of the news out there. Big shout out to Catherine Winder. She's a former Lucasfilm executive that is creating a time traveling chicken game to help kids cope with climate change. It's called Future Chicken, and she's doing some really interesting stuff there. So big shout out to her. Any woman in gaming.
It's adorable.
It is super cute. Like, good job. Good job. This is so fun. So I want to help support
topic,
in any way we
right?
can.
Like, it's, it's about, helping kids cope with ecological anxiety. You know, there's just so much of, and I think that's such a, not just that particular topic, but the idea of like these different areas that we need to take a moment back and realize how much media and how much our conversations and how much our impact on like the global environment, not just the green environment, but the environment in general, they hear it and it creates a whole other path of anxiety. So having different avenues like this that can help wade that is something that I'm really glad to see.
Yeah. And it looks great, I have to say.
It does.
So
it looks
super fun.
I mean, but look at the pedigree of where it came from. It's like Lucasfilms and all this background. It looks amazing.
So that's exciting. Also, the Game Awards are coming up, and they put out a trailer that is getting everyone hyped up about the games of 2024 that are coming. What did you think? What did you think of that trailer? We're going to include links to all of this, by the way, in the show notes. But
so, you know, the thing that got me with that trailer is because it uses a lot of the cinematics from like the cutscenes from video games. Yeah. So there was a lot of times where I was like, I know that game. I played that game. I'm like, what movie is that from? Because we're getting to this point where the video games are maybe I'm getting old and my vision's getting bad. But like, there are cutscenes where I'm just like, that's just a movie, right? Like, that's just a movie I didn't see. I'd have no idea where this came from. But the stuff that I did see in there that I recognized, I was super excited for. I mean, a lot of Zelda and Tears of the Kingdom from Nintendo. I'm glad to see that in there. It was such an amazing game. We'll see. You know, one of the things that I'm surprised we are not hearing more people talk about, and it doesn't deserve to be in the Game of the Year award. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. But I'm just enjoying it right now, is Meta finally released with Ubisoft Assassin's Creed in VR. It's like the first major AAA. Well, I can't say first major AAA because technically Tetris Effect was out there, and I love Tetris Effect, so I gotta like hand it where it deserves. But to see Assassin's Creed arrive on the Quest headset and play it, like, it is just so good. It is so fun.
Well, and in time for the holidays, I might add. So, tis the season for VR.
As someone who like started playing that with like the early Xbox days, like back in like 2010, and seeing it, I loved the game when it first came out. And I was like 20 something when it came out. I was obsessed with it. And to see it now in VR and to be able to like step into a role of like this franchise that I've been following for decades was what an experience. And they did it right. You know, it's not a perfect game, but they definitely proved that VR can do a AAA title. It's very good.
Yeah. And they could do it well. And I know, I think was it during MetaConnect that Mark Zuckerberg was talking about it on stage. Mm-hmm. I believe he was really excited. Yeah. So yeah, I haven't demoed it, to be honest. I'm going to be very, very honest here, and people are going to kill me, but my MetaQuest 3 is still in the box. I need to find some time to put it on. You know, I might be doing some Zumba maybe.
yeah.
I've just been so busy traveling and it's still there.
I love the Quest 3. I do. It's the inside out tracking. And this is where, you know, I've been doing this for too long. I love how quickly it tracks the room and like creates the barrier and like all of this stuff that was just a little clunky and non-immersive. You put this thing on, you still see your room. You watch like these pixels crawl across your floor and you can tell it's like actually tracking the three-dimensional space. All of that is so magical to me, but that's because I'm impressed with what's happening in the hardware.
It does the meshing really fast. That's what I hear. It meshes very fast and then boom. And that's, you know.
But if you're just going to play video games in it, if you're just going to do like Supernatural or you're just going to do some Zumba or you're just going to do Beat Saber or whatever, your Quest 2 is fine.
Yeah. Were you the one that was telling me that you're folding laundry while wearing your MetaQuest?
No. I know who you're talking about. That's a mutual friend of ours. I'm not that obsessed. No.
He was like, yeah, I use it while I fold laundry. It's like, that's actually a brilliant idea because I get so bored folding laundry. But I was like, is that you? Someone was doing it. So that's
no, I actually know who you're talking about, but I don't want to call him out on the air.
It's all good. So I think we're going to have him on the show eventually. I do think the MetaQuest 2 was on sale. It was like $75 off. I got friends reaching out to me saying, hey, should I buy this for my kid? Kept saying, buy him the Quest 3. And they're like, I don't know if I want to spend the money. So I do feel that we're going to see probably a lot of, and it happens every year, right? But we're going to see VR headsets under the tree. For sure. Again,
it's a heavily adopted product, but it's heavily adopted by a younger generation. And that's, I've been saying this to a lot of people that have come and talked to me about like, well, what is the user base of VR? Is it still fledgling? I'm like, it's actually not fledgling. It's just not the millennial generation. Some people have it, but the Gen Z and Gen Alpha, like, holy cow, they all have one. It's quite wild. I've gone camping and seen kids out in the woods.
That's crazy.
with their Quest headsets. And at that point I'm like, what have I done? Oh.
You're like, why? You should be enjoying nature. I don't think my kids will ever bring a headset. Well, you know, I actually never say never. Never say never. I can't say that, but I would normally not want them to bring their VR headset. We only have one for the family, so. But I would normally not want them to use it, like if we're going camping, unless like they really need to log in to do something or see something, or you know.
What possibly could that be, right? Like
the
Eminem
concert. Let's.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what we need to talk about next. Well, great way to segue into that conversation, Lee. Oh my gosh. Okay, so let's go. No, games, right? I think we should just have a section called games every week, right? But yeah, Fortnite's Eminem concert, you know, huge success, big announcements with Lego. You know, how many users was it this? They were just concurrently
together?
I didn't
see the user count, but I can't imagine.
I'll pull up the number. It's ridiculous. Yeah. Like Fortnite is like, they're just crushing the numbers. They're doing so well. And then the concert was fantastic. It was, you know, a bit of a kind of crazy to try to get in and stuff. But once you got in and got to experience it, it was amazing. I didn't do it live. I actually watched it afterwards. Mm-hmm. Someone had pre-recorded the whole thing. And yeah, it was amazing. It was just... I watched it with my 7-year-old next to me, and she was like, wow, mommy, that is amazing. And she was like,
now before you get a bunch of like angry parents, let's qualify.
Yes.
There was nothing obscene in this performance. It was all edited. Like, she's not watching this with a 7-year-old.
No. This is, this is like Slim Shady.
I saw the emails coming in from that, and I was like,
Calm down, people. Calm down, parents. No, we watched like the whole thing on like the skins that people are wearing, and then they had to go through all the like the car experience. Like, yeah, there was like then this Lego village. And she kept saying like, "Oh my gosh, mom, I can't tell you how excited she was about the Lego part."
That's great.
Yeah, and then Eminem was performing, she was like, "Oh, I know that song," and then she checked out. But the Lego part.
Well, the music's just oldies at this point. Yeah, I said it.
You said it. But I play that song a lot, you know, in clean version, you know. But anyway, it used to be the song I used to walk to on, like, when I wanted to walk up on stage.
That's a song everybody walked to up on stage.
Right? Before it got politicized.
Lose Yourself.
That
song intro, everybody for like 20 years, if there was a stage to walk on, was playing.
I remember social media marketing world. I've spoken there several years, but the one time I got to speak on the main stage, they were like, "What's your song?" I was like, "That's the song. Play it, please." So Lose Yourself. But like, anyway,
okay, play track three again. Just
oh my god!
I do want to say something about the music on that show, though, on the performance.
Do it.
And this is for the technical people out there. So UEFN import, like, all of this has to be built on some like level of Unreal. And there was an article that we discussed a couple of shows ago about how they were struggling to do the voice animation for the like last verse of this song called Godzilla. And it is, I think it might actually hold like the Guinness World Record for most words per minute in a rap song. It's something like that. And it's insanely fast. And so as I'm watching this concert and I'm looking specifically for that, whoever animated the lip sync for that did not get paid enough. It was impeccable. Impeccable. I can't even talk. I was so impressed by it. It was spot on. If you really looked at the mouth animations of the avatar for Eminem doing this incredibly fast rap song, and the engine didn't balk at it, I was flabbergasted. Yeah. Like that I know how hard that work is, especially for something that's rendering in a game engine. We're not talking about like rendering this in cinematic tools.
No,
this has to be rendered in a video game engine, and one that has been pretty well kneecapped because it's got to support the entire Fortnite, you know, game platform. So most impressive thing for me on that entire show. And what really got me was like, most people probably didn't even notice. But it deserves the nod.
It deserves to be talked about. And remember I mentioned it, like I posted an article that was talking about how he was rapping so fast that he was breaking the reactive skins.
Yeah.
And that was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. It reminded me of when we worked together on Walmart Land's Electric Fest.
Yeah. That was exactly where I went. I was like, I know how hard this is.
This is crazy. So when we were producing Youngblood for Electric Fest, and he's a young, you know, performer, super high energy, he kept breaking the suit that we were using.
Yeah.
And I got to a point where I was like, "Hey, can you like bring the energy down just a little bit for the sake of the technology?"
Yeah.
And it was funny because he was like, "No one has ever asked me to bring down the energy, right? Everyone wants super high energy all the time, but I needed a clean capture." So, so it was like, okay, so the technology hasn't caught up to Youngblood or Eminem, you know. So
but they made it.
But they made it. They cleaned it up. I'm sure they had to clean that up heavily, right?
It had to
reanimate and stuff.
Oh, I'm sure they had to. But that means someone sat there and worked every syllable of that song and made it. There's no auto plug-in for that. Like, that is digital art in my book. I was just so shocked. It was great.
It was beautiful. It was beautiful. Well done. It was interesting because I read this thing where people were disappointed that it was short, like a short concert. I was like, I don't know what they were expecting, but producing these concerts is a lot. Like, how long was Electric Fest? Was it?
Electric Fest was shockingly long in the grand scheme of things. So it was about 30 minutes. It was just over 30 minutes. It was three artists and each artist was doing three songs.
Yeah.
It may be one of the longest concerts in Roblox. I think it is the longest concert in Roblox. It definitely has the most artist changes in a concert in Roblox to date. That was a very complex show.
Artist changes and wardrobe. I mean, we did all their virtual couture, which was crazy. We did it in record time. I mean, I went to LA and worked with each one of these artists to choreograph them to make sure that they knew what we could and couldn't do with the tech. Yep. I mean, yeah, I wish more people knew like about that work we did. It was fantastic, though.
I mean, over the course of what, 3 days, I think there was like about 120,000 unique visitors. So like a good, and that's the thing that's really shocking is the amount of foot traffic that this type of entertainment, even if the show's only like a 10-minute show with Eminem is one of the biggest artists in the world. Undeniable. Sells out arenas. There's no arena big enough to handle the type of traffic a show can pull like this, right? Like that's the value add when it comes to this of like, yeah, you got these, you know, 30,000, I don't know how big a venue is in that side, but it just gets dwarfed when you start seeing what internet numbers for an event like this can be. It's shocking.
Well, that's why I think like venues like TSX Entertainment that are, you know, New York and are going to have, you know, already having those concerts where the stage opens up to Times Square, like that just takes it to a different level. So for the artist, it's definitely a lot more people engaging with their concerts and their music. So that's really good. And then the Lego part, I mean, like I said, my 7-year-old was literally, she could care less about Eminem. It was all about Lego. It was all, she doesn't play Fortnite, right? But she was like, oh, mom, now I understand why you're playing Fortnite. I was like, well, it's more than that. But yeah, the whole Lego part, I mean, and congratulations to everyone at Epic Games and Lego who have been partnering on this for months. Our dear friend, John Bazell, he definitely worked on this really hard. Congratulations. I mean, I just hats job, off bro. To Epic and Lego. This beautiful. Like
Lego's always been on the forefront of like new technology. When I was in high school, they were playing with like robotics heavily. They just started like Lego robotics, and that was a big part of them getting back into school systems and getting back in front of kids. Like they're in a very positive educational STEM focused way. You know, they've just kind of been one of these companies for a company that basically just makes plastic bricks that snap together. They've stayed relevant. And for any like buddy who's not seen it, there's an episode on Netflix for The Toys That Made Us that's about like the history of Lego. Holy cow, is that such a good it's like 30 minutes long, but it's just mind-blowing how close to extinction they got to like pull out of
the I can't imagine the world without Lego. Like no, I can't. My kids, it's such a big part of their lives. Like it's their building tool. Like, yeah, I mean, my son is a Roblox developer, but his first tool, and he still builds with Lego. Like his list includes a lot of the architecture sets from Lego right now. So, oh my gosh, that's so crazy. And then they have the Lego styles as well that are, you know, available. And yeah, just a lot more stuff coming from them on December 7th. So, you know, hats off, big congratulations to everyone at Epic Games and Lego that have just done, you know, I mean, I cannot wait to see what else, like, I don't know. I'm just excited.
They'll do something that we're not expecting. They always do.
I'm sure. I'm sure there will be lots of twists and turns and interesting things that happen. And, but yeah, I'm just so happy that this is happening. So, you know, I'm obviously a big fan of the Epic Games team, big fan of Roblox, big fan of all these amazing teams. So congratulations. Anyway, anything else you want to add about Fortnite, Eminem?
I'm waiting. No, I'm going to wait until December 7th to see what else comes. Okay. And I would be really interested to know the correlation of new, and no one's going to give this data out, but I would love to know the correlation of like, okay, Eminem drops this Fortnite thing. What did Spotify do after that? Like how many, you know what I mean? Point. Like I really would love if I could get my hands on the data of what that conversion rate to like new streams, because it is
that's a startup idea.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, but people still hold that data.
I'm sure someone can hack it. Who knows? Yeah. No, I'm not saying you should. I'm not saying people, you should go hack this information.
What I heard was Kathy told me.
Told me to go and do this. No, I'm not saying that. I'm the good cop here, okay? I'm the good cop. The good cop here, Lee. Come on. Let's wrap up the games section. And by the way, guys, anyone that's listening and has like really cool gaming news, like send us an email. Like let us know like what's happening, because there's so much. Like I feel like we share our stories. Like, we have a Slack channel where we share a lot of these stories, and we never make it to all of them because there's so many stories every single
I've got to go through and like highlight. I'm like, oh, I want to talk about this one. We got to get to this.
We have to do this
every,
one.
I do that every week.
So crazy, crazy. But I know there's one that you want to talk about specifically. That was in the MIT, was it an MIT or Harvard Business Review?
It was an MIT, yeah.
MIT, yep. Okay. That talked about the environmental impact of generative AI prompts.
Yes.
So what are, yeah, I mean, I didn't dive deep into it. I just remember it said like it's the same as, well, maybe you can fill people in because yeah, I'm not prepared to talk about this.
No, that's fine. I can talk about it. It's the MIT Technology Review. And the basic headline is making an image with generative AI uses as much energy as charging your phone. And so there's this whole eyebrow raising question of what's the ecological impact of utilizing AI models to do calculations. Now, in some instances, as they found with like text-based AI models giving like research and answers and things like that, it's incredibly small. Like, it's actually a positive use of the technology. Even creating text 1,000 times only used as much energy as like 16% of a smartphone charge. Like, it was minuscule amounts of energy. But then this study goes on to start looking at where things like image generation causes a significant more amount of energy consumption. And I took issue with this because they kept going back to comparing it to the act of charging a cell phone and how much energy it takes to charge a cell phone. But it doesn't ever actually break down what that offset looks like. And my argument for this, and this is where I get really irked mm-hmm. about articles that are written like this, because it's a very interesting article, but they're definitely utilizing this weird litmus test of what energy expense is valid and what isn't. And mm-hmm. I'm looking at it going, you're comparing it to charging a cell phone. Okay, it's relatable. Mm-hmm. I can understand why you're doing that. But let's compare it to a person opening their laptop and sitting at it with Photoshop for like the next 3 hours creating the first draft of something. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, you're expending so much if for a human to go out and make that image. You're expending so much more energy, right? Like, you've got hours and hours of development time,
mm-hmm.
you know, that goes into making one image, and you might get the sketch of it by the end of the day. You know, one of the things that they compared to this was that creating, and I want to make sure that I get my data correct here.
Yeah. I am curious about what is, because I do hear that, like, and it makes sense to me in some ways that from a compute power perspective, that there is an environmental impact,
right?
If you're running these, if you need so much compute power and you need water and you need energy and all these sorts of things, so there has to be an environmental cost,
right?
And I just don't know what the equivalent is.
So what they said here is generating 1,000 images with a powerful AI model is the equivalent of driving 4.1 miles in an average gasoline powered car. But, and I think that raises eyebrows of like, oh my gosh, that sounds horrible. That's 1,000 images and it's 4.1 miles. The average person, at least in Oregon, in my city, commutes 25 minutes a day. And that's if they live close. That's average. So there's a good amount of people who go, like, and they're not in a graphic designer going to their job does not generate 1,000 images in a day, right? So if you really want to talk about the 4.1 miles that 1,000 images take up, let's put it in practical terms of a human having to do that and what that energy consumption looks like. All of a sudden, the whole conversation, that whole dynamic shifts when you start breaking down what a single human is capable of producing in a single day, and the fact that they've got to do their own commute and they've got to sit at their own computer that's burning its own energy, and they then have to go out and have their lunch breaks, and they got to do all of these other things. The second you start breaking down what the human, just human life's environmental impact is, and then you look at that answer and you say, it's 1,000 images. That seems like a good trade-off to me. And we haven't even gotten to a point where we have actually started caring about this question. So we're on a good trip if 1,000 images is the same as 4 miles of
code. I don't know. It does worry me, I have to say, from a compute power perspective in running some of these things and like how I don't know. Like, I feel like I need to dig deeper into
that's the
what
thing.
Is the environmental cost here?
Right.
Because from a data, like a data center perspective, like there are, this is, you know, you need a lot of energy and water. So
you do, but it shocked me that this specific article from MIT's Technology Review, it's their study, is saying that 1,000 generated images is the equivalent of driving 4.1 miles in a standard vehicle. And that's what got me is like, that sound like my
that was
initial reaction.
That specific piece of data, right?
Yeah, it was that specific. Because as I thought about, I don't generate 1,000 images in a day.
No.
Like, no, like
not
I don't.
Not even
like,
a month. Like, no. I don't need that many images.
No. So like, as you start looking at it, and it flat out said, using it for text is actually ecologically sound. Like it is a minuscule amount. Everything burns energy, right? On some level, it's such a low amount of energy that it's better than doing your research through like Wikipedia and Google. Like it's just better to ask ChatGPT. It's actually greener to do that because it's burning so little. But then it gets to the image thing and I'm just like, I'm reading it. And I'm like, I get what you're trying to say. But I'm not buying that. That's actually a negative. That actually sounds pretty impressive, and we can do better, and we should. We should be aiming to do better. But I'm surprised at how good that actually is when you break it down and think about. Well, humans had to do this.
So yeah, and how many humans are really creating 1,000 images when they sit down to do this? So that's a very valid point. I think, you know, maybe for next week, and this is something I've been thinking a lot about lately, working on an article. Talking about how, in my perspective, 2024 is going to be the year of the large vision models. So right now, everyone's LLMs. Like I really, you know, as a visual people, as people that work in spatial computing and all these different things, I do truly believe that that next step for AI is beyond LLMs. It'll be large vision models. And that's kind of where we're heading. It's something I've been tracking and thinking about and kind of exploring. As I write this article for a couple months, I first kind of really got into large vision models when I was at an event in Silicon Valley near Sand Hill, where all the VCs are. And large vision models came up several times. And it was kind of like not something a lot of people were talking about, but I do feel that in the next couple of months, as we get closer to, you know, to spatial computing becoming potentially a reality, large vision models are going to be something incredibly important. So I, now that you're saying that, like, I don't know what the, like that in itself is going to require like having computing
It'll
power.
It'll take a lot of,
yeah.
But how much power did we just shoot into the atmosphere while we were trying to create like cryptocurrencies on the blockchain and FTX sunk everything? Like if we're going to actually do this and get something out of it, we should at least look at the one-for-one exchange, right? Yeah. And I think
what are we actually getting? How does this make our lives better? Is there, I agree.
What are we saving in time and humanity? Cause just being a human is not a good cost trade for, you know, the environment. we just expel energy. Like that's just kind of what life is.
That's what we do as humans.
So what are we saving on the back end when we do this? It seems like AI might be, and I'm not smart enough to give you the full data. That's why I'm reading these articles to everybody. But it does seem on some surface that AI might be actually a green technology.
I don't know about that. I think that that might be going a little too far. I don't know if I would call it green per se. I'm going to be bad cop here. I don't know. Like I feel like that might be taking it too far. But we'll see.
1,000 text inquiry like queries was less than 16% of charging an iPhone. And they were like, that's really darn good. Like that's pretty solid.
But I don't know if I would say it's a green technology per se. Like, I think that's it's pushing it. But anyway, I think for next week, let's definitely talk about large vision models. I think my article should be out by then. So we can definitely dive deep into that. So for this week, and we're going to go on break soon, but for this week, the interview is with Irina Cronin. She is with Dados Technologies and also Infinite Retina. She's someone that I learn from her every day. We're good friends. We're working on a few things together. So she and I will be talking about the work that she's been doing, especially around spatial computing. As everyone knows here, that's a big, big focus of mine in 2024 is spatial computing and AI and the importance that AI and computer vision play in spatial computing. And obviously, you know, gaming, Generation Alpha, you know, future of AI wearables. That's all kind of my jam.
It all goes hand in hand at the end of the day.
Oh, yeah. It all goes together. So the interview will be with Irina Cronin. So let's go to the break and then we'll have Irina.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now I am joined by the amazing, amazing Irina Cronin. She's the SVP of Product at Datos Technology and the CEO of Infinite Retina, and someone that I learn from every day, that I admire, that I think is one of those, you know, really successful visionary women in tech, spatial computing, AI. Irina, welcome to Tech Magic.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on.
I am thrilled to have you here, and you and I chat very often lately about a lot of different things.
Yes,
but I want to kind of explore a little bit of the work that you've been doing, a lot about what you're thinking through when it comes to spatial computing and AI. You've been part of the industry for a very long time. So maybe for folks that might not have come across you, and many people have, but folks that might be new to who you are and what you do, can you introduce yourself and tell folks a little bit about what you're doing?
Sure. So spatial computing is very dear to my heart. And yes, you're right. I've been in the industry since 2015, basically doing consulting with large and also smaller companies, entrepreneurs who are trying to build up spatial computing companies, which include those that do AR, VR, AI, and anything having to do with spatial computing. And just a very brief note, what's spatial computing? Well, it's anything and everything, including software and hardware that you would use, a person, a virtual being, or a robot to move through 3D space. So what I've been doing is consulting in the area and helping as many people as possible to do spatial computing.
Yeah, and you're someone that I say, you know, that I always learn from in a lot of your posts and a lot of the work you're doing in spatial. Why are you interested in spatial computing? Why do you think it's transformative?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So
I think we need a whole hour for that one, but we don't. We don't have it. So
the timing, I mean, spatial computing has been around for a while, right? But like recently, fairly recently, it's been with VR because you do need spatial computing. You do need an understanding of 3D space and 3D technology to be able to do VR. But now it's moved into AR, where you need 3D space understanding to be able to move through your reality, your existing reality, and to place something on top of it. And then now AI has been around for a while as well. You need computer vision to be able to do spatial computing. So why am I interested in it? I'm an extremely visual person. I love anything having to do with technologies that has to do with visual stuff. And I've been waiting for this for a very long time. It actually excites me quite a bit. And the timing as to why now is so important for spatial computing. Well, the Apple Vision Pro is coming out in the spring of next year. And that is a bona fide spatial computing device. So yes, that is the reason why I'm in the industry.
Yeah, it's a really exciting moment, right? I think we're all holding our breath and just excitement and want to see this out in the world. So that's great. And you mentioned AI briefly, but you know, generative AI obviously is all the rage, is what everyone wants to talk about right now. Where do you see AI with respect to spatial computing?
Oh, yeah. So beyond computer vision and sensor technology, which you do need to do the 3D technology stuff with spatial computing, generative AI is going to completely transform what can be done there. I mean, in terms of both consumers and enterprise people being able to do their own creations and have them in 3D space. Now, I could tell you that with VR, yeah, there was spatial computing there and there was 3D. And also with phones, with mobile phones, with Niantic and all that kind of stuff, there was AR. But for the first time in the world and in this time period, people, regular consumers, will be able to have 3D creations that they have created and then be able to place them out in AR if they want to, or even VR if they want to. So generative AI encompasses both text to visual, which is photography, like pseudo photography, and also video, which is the new thing. So imagine having 3D video that anyone, even a 10-year-old child, can create and visualize. So it's going to be an explosion of 3D visualization and technology.
And definitely an explosion, I think, of creativity as well, right?
Oh, my gosh. You know, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How are you envisioning? So some people, this is a really interesting thing that I keep hearing is like, people are like, oh, spatial computing is only mixed reality or things like that. Or we don't need to focus on that right now because we're hyper-focusing on generative AI. How do you balance that?
Okay. So generative AI is absolutely amazing. There's no doubt about that. Currently, its use is in 2D screens, right? And also in writing, let's say, if you use it for writing. So why not push it a little farther and do it into 3D? I mean, its use of generative AI in a space like 3D, which will really make it even more revolutionary. So that's why I think it's super important to understand where generative AI's place is in spatial computing and why spatial computing is going to be the juggernaut for businesses going forward to be able to use 3D technology to show their products, for consumers to be able to see their families, and for educational reasons to be able to do that as well. So it's just huge.
And when you think of who's leading the way, right, in spatial computing and who people need to pay attention to, which companies are you keeping your eyes on? Obviously Apple, right? But like, are there any other companies that you're thinking through or any thoughts around Apple?
Okay, so Apple is definitely the number one company that anyone can think of in this reality, new reality. Qualcomm has a definite place because it feeds a lot of companies, new companies and older companies, in doing spatial computing, including Samsung, which is coming out with a mixed reality headset next year as well. So I'd say all the older, well, relatively older, familiar names like...
Older for us, right? Because we've been in the industry for a while, but some people listening to this podcast, they probably have never heard of them. So
yeah, I know. It's the usual suspects, you know?
The OGs.
Meta, for sure, because they're coming out with their AR headset, and there will be a mixed reality headset as well. And Google is cooking up an AR headset, and they have been for quite a while, and that will be coming out probably in 2025, 2026, although it might be sooner. And then, like I said, Samsung and Sony, oh my gosh, Sony's been working on an AR headset since like 2018. So I think once the other companies come out with their versions, they will come out with theirs as well. So they're waiting for the, you know, industry opportunity. So all of those companies, and then any other upstarts and newbies that come in, you know, to join the party.
Yeah, and I think that there's a lot of conversation around these, the future of these devices, right? Used, you know, infused with AI, whether it is, you know, the rumors of OpenAI, you know, well, Sam Altman talking to Johnny Ive about doing something, or whether it's the Humane AI Pin, or, you know, the Apple Vision Pro. There's definitely a lot of talk, I think, especially in Silicon Valley, around what device replaces our computers or what device replaces our mobile phones.
Yeah.
So any comments on that?
I am a huge believer that the Apple Vision Pro will one day, and it might not be so far away, replace computing in terms of the 2D computing, you know, the regular computers that we haul around and the computers at home. and also replace the phone. Now, before it replaces the phone, it probably will interface with the phone for a period of time, which will be really helpful. But I would say within 6 years or so, maybe earlier, people will start to gravitate towards using the Apple Vision Pro as their number one resource for computing.
That actually leads me to one of my last questions, Irina, which is, when you think about the future of the spatial computing ecosystem and the landscape and technology in general, what does that future look like in, 5 or 6 years for spatial computing? Maybe as we looked towards 2029 or 2030, even, like, how do you see that future looking?
Well, it's the explosion having to do with media and entertainment is going to be the most obvious thing. You know, one of the reasons why Apple is getting into this game in spatial computing is to extend its media industry area, where they started, with Apple Plus and other things, but it's tough with all the other streaming companies in there to really make their mark. So with the Apple Vision Pro, their media and entertainment area is going to really get much bigger, and the offerings that they will have for 3D, which won't exist on other headsets. So they're going to have that opportunity to build that up and be the only ones that build it up with their franchise. So that stuff is going to explode. And then I would think that other companies that are doing mixed reality and AR will also be rallying to make these 3D experiences in entertainment. And then you have the regular older studios that will also rally to do that as well. So I see a lot of the entertainment stuff really bringing that into the forefront for consumers and making it really obvious that that is something that they want and have wanted for a long time, even if they weren't aware of it. Also, in terms of retail buying stuff, oh my gosh, it's going to be like so obvious.
I can't wait. I'll tell you that part I'm excited about.
I've been thinking about it for years. You know, I want to be able to see something in front of me in detail, not in some blurry kind of way, and be able to move around and see, well, do I really want this? And then also for trying on stuff in stores and even trying on stuff at home, if you want to see if it fits you, if it looks right, I do think that's going to happen. So anything from smaller objects to medium objects for the house to even larger objects where you can visualize a car in front of you in your driveway and walk around it and see if you actually like it, These are going to be amazing things that are going to be so obvious for people and at the forefront of this new 3D world. And of course, there are other very important things, like in manufacturing, you'll have people who will be able to fix machines quite easily using this and be able to create them as well and blueprint them. And then you have education, where if we do ever come up with, a virtual education, which I think we will, an educational platform that is truly good at doing that, having 3D visualization is going to be really, really important. And you could also perhaps see some of your classmates doing the 3D visualization as well. So that brings it closer than actually we have now. So there's tons of industries that will be able to pipe into 3D, and then both consumers and enterprise will be able to use it. So I think 6 years to 10 years, it's going to be a regular everyday thing.
I love that idea of thinking about spatial computing as becoming ubiquitous, right? Mm-hmm. Some way, something that we all do every day and we don't even think about it. Just like we do with our mobile phones. Like
I'm plastered to my mobile phone. I'm using mobile phone now to do this, interview.
So there you go. One day will be a spatial computer. Yeah. That you will use. My last question before we wrap up is, because you mentioned, all the potential use cases, industries that are already using it or that are going to be able to use it and change their businesses. I want to talk about developers as well, because I do feel like right now it's hard. It's hard to develop, in some ways. Do you think it's going to get easier? Do you think there's an opportunity right now for developers when it comes to spatial computing?
Absolutely. So I actually know quite a few developers that are developing stuff for the Apple Vision Pro with the Vision OS, right? And currently, it is limited for a lot of different reasons, including security and privacy. And also, they're fixing a couple of things that will be even better when the headset comes out in spring next year. So there is an opportunity for developers to build for the Apple Vision Pro using the Vision OS, and actually a pretty good understanding of what that app is going to be like when you're able to build specifically for the headset when it comes out. There are opportunities for developers to go to app places that Apple has, including Cupertino, where they could actually use a headset and build for it directly. And they've been very open with accepting people to do that. And you could go several times. It's not only a one-time thing. You could go, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 times. They let you in to be able to develop it. So there is that opportunity with Apple. I wouldn't say for other ones, there's a ton of opportunity because they, you know, that you need the hardware, right? And then you need the specialized software to do that. And right now, most of the software for 3D capability has been with mobile, right? Versus headsets. Yeah, we have VR stuff, right? That Meta has come out with. I'm not a big VR person, so I'm not going to, you know, talk too much about that. But with AR, AR now is going to be the big thing, but you do need the headset to be able to do that for consumers.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you mentioned the developer labs, because I'm heading to an Apple developers lab. Yeah,
yeah,
with one of my engineers. So it's truly an amazing opportunity. Obviously, I haven't been, so I don't know, but I know people that have been invited. Again, they applied to developer labs, and if you're an Apple developer and you have certain things and you're already kind of testing out the Vision OS, like, there's ways to apply. We can include a link definitely in the show notes. But yeah, it's a really exciting time, Irina. It's just, yeah, it's an exciting time. It's exciting to have you on the podcast, and I want folks, like anyone that's listening to the podcast that might, you know, find what you're saying incredibly interesting, or might want to connect with you or learn more about spatial computing, how can they connect with you? How can they reach you?
Okay, so I have my mail open in X, formerly Twitter. Anyone can reach me there. And you could also reach me via email, which is on my X account, on my X page. So I'm very easily reached. And if, you know, I could even be reached by phone. You could find that online if you want to, but better reach me by email or X.
You'll be texting her at 2 in the morning, people, okay?
Right.
And Twitter, yeah. You might be up at 2 in the morning because I know you don't sleep. You're always working. Amazing. You're like, your productivity level, Irina, is amazing. So anyway, bow down to you on that. But anyway, Irina, thanks for being on Tech Magic. It was, like I said, I always learn so much from you. So thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you so much, Kathy. I'll be talking to you soon.
Yeah.
All right. Bye.
All right. So that was a really interesting interview with Irina Cronin. We talked about, what is spatial computing? How can it be used in manufacturing? How, you know, all the different things that are happening in that space. And she's someone that I definitely follow very closely. So very interesting, right, Lee?
Very, very. I mean, yeah. It's a growing area, and it's one of those things that I think anytime you can get a hold of somebody who can mm-hmm. give you that type of level of insight, I just kind of like shut up and listen.
So she's fantastic. I do want to kind of turn it over now to our producer, Lily Snyder, to do Dispatch from the Fringe. She's going to take us into a deep dive into some of these corporate worlds in the gaming space. So take it away, Lily.
Hi, Kathy and Lee. I am back to bring you another Dispatch from the Fringe, and I hope you're ready to journey to Roblox again for the weird news and culture. In an article from The Guardian, "Who Wants to Farm Potatoes in the Metaverse? Exploring Roblox Corporate Hellholes," we learn about the real-world brands bringing their real-world selves to Roblox. For instance, the other week, we talked about Ryanair, an unofficial game in Roblox that kids built to be as realistic as possible, even down to the reputation that Ryanair has as a discount airline. Now, other brands are entering Roblox, mostly in Livetopia, the more open game setting. In Farms of the Future, you learn about potatoes, but not the fun potatoes that you might think in the future, like vertical farming and flying drone harvesters. Instead, you get to learn about soil health, biodiversity, and on-farm resilience to climate change. So that's pretty cool. Visitors to Roblox can choose the right hair color in L'Oreal's Paris Hair Color part of Livetopia. They can visit Samsung's Space Tycoon and go to work mining raw materials like copper and cobalt to turn into Samsung products like Galaxy Watches and Z Flip Phones. And let's not forget, even Victoria's Secret is in Roblox. Their brand Happy Nation, that is geared towards tweens, launched their own range of inclusive gender-free products. In their store, you can customize shirts and play obstacle games to win virtual money, which, as you talked about in the show, that's all that kids want for Christmas. So brands are in Roblox, kids are in Roblox. It might sound tedious, but maybe we shouldn't knock it until we try it. And that is your dispatch from the Fringe.
All right. That was awesome, Lee. I mean, yeah. Anyway, I don't know. Any thoughts?
It's one of those, do you want like the potatoes and do you want fries with that? Like, okay. Like, every time Lily's got something I'm not expecting.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know, but super fun, super fun. And I know people love that segment. We've gotten some good feedback on Dispatch from the Fringe. So we'll continue to bring it to y'all. And anyway, Lee, thanks for joining me for this episode.
Anytime.
Thank you. Thank you. So thanks to everyone for joining us for Tech Magic. Come for the tech, stay for the magic. We love that we're getting great feedback from everyone. I want to thank all our listeners. Please subscribe, review, share. This podcast is growing thanks to all of you that are listening. And who knows, maybe that what I put out there in the universe, maybe we'll have a live tour next year, Lee. Wouldn't that be fun?
I'm down. Let's do it.
Let's go to London. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But it'd be really fun if we could do some live events next year and get meet some of the community. So anyway, thank you everyone for listening, and we will hear you and we will see you and we will be here next week. So stay tuned for more Tech Magic.
Hey there, podcast fam. Are you ready to break free from the social media rut? Hold on to your hats because we've got just the thing for you. Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for leveling up your online presence. Whether you're a personal brand or a company, they've got the tools and know-how to take you to the next level. With Viral Growth, forget about those endless hours of video editing. They handle everything from brainstorming to polishing your content so you can just focus on being awesome. And guess what? We're hooking you up with a sweet deal. Use code ADWEEK for 10% off when you sign up. Ready to take your social media game to the next level? Head on over to viralgrowth.io and let's turn those digital dreams into a reality.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.